My responsibility is to make this place great again.
This is not the 1980s OSU.
Remember, always have faith in God, but have faith in yourself, and certainly have faith in the Cowboys.
Let her rip!
We are back at it. Welcome back to another edition of the Pistols Firing Podcast. I'm Carson Cunningham, joined as always by Colby Powell. Colby, happy Saturday to you. It's good to talk with you. We got a lot going on OSU-wise. We got the Thunder playoffs gearing up tonight. I got my Thunder champ shirt on. You never know if you're going to have another opportunity to buy one of those, Colby. So I got one of those, and I'm excited. How's your weekend going?
Fantastic. Yeah, I had a golf tournament this morning, and it is a beautiful day. We got terrible weather for our first few tournaments of the spring, but I mean, by the time we were six or seven holes in, it's like 70 degrees, hardly any wind. So a little two-man best ball. We finished a shot back today, Carson, but we played great. We were playing with pretty much lapped the field, and we finished one shot back of those guys. So it was a good morning. Good day.
Yeah, it's pretty good though. I mean, just one back. That's pretty impressive. So, first, let's get to our sponsor of the show. You know Chris's University Spirit. They've been with us since the very get-go. Appreciate them sponsoring the show as always. Be sure to log on. You can get free shipping on any order over $75. They got hats. They've got tailgating, all your tailgating stuff, the apparel, merchandise, everything you would need for game days on Saturdays for college football. Certainly, if you're out there outside O'Brate doing a little tailgating as well, be sure to stop by Chris's. They can hook you up with all the latest, greatest OSU gear, apparel, accessories, even the license plate holders you see right there on the website. So we appreciate Chris's sponsoring the podcast as always, as well as Echo, which we'll get to here in a little bit. Echo Contracting. Colby, I had a lot of directions I could start with. I think first is we've long speculated whether Mike Gundy would get back into coaching or get into television. He's just a natural fit for TV. He's been very comfortable holding press conferences for 20 plus years and is not afraid of the microphone. We've seen him star, in fact, in those coaches' film rooms for the national championship game. But Mike Gundy appeared with Colin Cowherd, which to me, Colby, was really, I think, not a trial run. I think it's just what they're going to be doing throughout the college football season. I think he'll be kind of a frequent guest come college football season, and who knows what his other roles might expand to. But it appears, anyway, that Mike Gundy's hooked up with Fox for this college football season.
Yeah, and look, Mike was Mike on Fox. He was charismatic. He had some good answers. The one that kind of made headlines was him talking about Mahomes being the best quarterback that he ever played against in college football, and how he told him to go pro and go make his money. And yeah, he was classic Mike Gundy. So it does seem like he's going to be with Fox this year, and that'll be a good fit. Cowherd, I think, is a good fit with him. He'll set him up to let him just be Mike Gundy and let the personality flow. I'll be curious. He doesn't strike me as like a guy who wants to be in the booth. I don't think he'll do that and spend time at stadiums. I don't know if he'd want to do any of the pregame stuff. You know, for a long time, like Urban Meyer has been on Fox's pregame show, and he's terrible. I don't know if they would yank him out of there and put Gundy on in his place. I don't know if Urban Meyer, without having the country accent, is a little more appeasable to the rest of the country, but I think Mike would be great in that role. So, yeah, Mike's got all the charisma in the world, and he's great on microphones. He's great on camera, and yeah, he'll have a great second career if that's something that he wants to do more and more of.
Look, I know Urban Meyer had the better head coaching career resume, even though he was a known cheater for my money. But I think just in likability factor, it's night and day between Mike Gundy and Urban Meyer. Mike Gundy is very well liked nationally. All the Barstool guys, Barstool Big Cat, and then they always love when Gundy's kind of holding court and saying funny things. So I do think him hosting pre and post games or being on like a panel of that sort would suit him better than like I totally agree with you on. I don't see Mike wanting to travel and go like that. You know, they go like early in the week to go interview the coaches, the players. They're there for several days leading up to the game itself. They don't just show up on game day to call games on Fox or ESPN. So I couldn't see him wanting to do that. Kind of like Bob Stoops didn't either. Bob Stoops was on the show before Urban Meyer. So I think that would be a natural fit. And but first, I did have the clip, actually, of Colin Cowherd and Mike Gundy. And I have some more thoughts on Mike and his delivery and everything, being a former TV guy myself. But Let's hear that clip you mentioned where Cowherd kind of sets him up to talk about some of the best players in the Big 12. Let me see if I got my volume working here. Yeah, 1 second. I should pull this up in just a second. Here we go.
Your game, there were 54, 48 games all the time. It was a wild conference. Virtually, it felt impossible to go undefeated. You go to Lubbock and you all of a sudden you're staring down the barrel of, 45 points. Was there a moment when you watched Mahomes and turned to somebody on your staff and said in a film room, boy, this guy, the NFL doesn't have any idea how good he is? Or were you kind of caught off guard by his greatness?
He was the best college quarterback that I've ever seen.
Wow.
And I told him after his junior year, we beat them, I think by 1 point, it was like 46 to 47, 45, 44. It was a score like that. And I went out on the field and told him, I said, Patrick, I said, there's no reason you should come back and play college football next year. You need to go out. And he laughed. And I was being serious because he was the best college quarterback that I'd ever seen.
Wow.
He made play after play after play after play. And he did it in very high scoring games.
Yes.
At that time, and he was in our league, we had four or five quarterbacks in the Big 12 every year over about a 6 or 7 year stretch, and all of them played in the NFL. And you know as well as anybody, if you have an NFL quarterback on your team in college, you're going to win games. You win 9, 10, 11, 12 games.
Right.
He played against those teams week to week. He was the best college quarterback that I'd ever seen.
Take Mahomes out. Who's the best non-quarterback player in your 21 years? And it could be a Cowboy. It could be any. Give me two or three players that you knew instantly. Maybe it was high school. Maybe they developed. But other players that you just knew, Mike, they were going to be stars in pro football.
Well, from a coaching standpoint, I had the luxury of coaching Dez Bryant and Justin Blackman. Those guys were unbelievable. And I've been very fortunate at Oklahoma State. Brandon Weed and Mason Rudolph had great players. But the issue that we had at Oklahoma State was we were playing Oklahoma that had Kyler Murray, had Baker Mayfield, and had Jalen Hurts. And it was every year. And I joke with Coach Stoops about that. You know, those guys would leave, and I thought, well, at least we don't have to face Kyler Murray next year. And then they bring in Hurts. And it just wore us out. But the quarterback play in that league was tremendous.
Yeah.
It's pretty good stuff, Colby. And pretty good stuff, Colby. And what's your take on Patrick Mahomes in college? I do feel like we weren't talking about him in these terms when he was in Lubbock. I do feel like a little bit of his NFL career has affected retroactively him being all of a sudden the best college quarterback that Mike Gundy's ever seen. I mean, look, he was great, and he threw for 5,000 yards his final year at Tech. But I do feel like a little bit of his NFL career has enhanced how we felt about him coming out, because Tech wasn't very good those years. I know his defense wasn't great, but he wasn't like, just putting the team on his back and winning a bunch of games either. They were pretty middling in the Big 12. But what do you think of Mike and his demeanor, his delivery, and his TV appearance with Cowherd?
Yeah, on the first subject with Mahomes, like, they were pretty regularly winning 7 games when he was there. So I think that kept him from being elevated to just kind of the pantheon of college quarterbacks as it happened. Now he gets to the pros and you see the tools, and then you go back and watch the college highlights, and it's like, oh, this guy was a freak. Like, he was a freak all along. Well, let's remember the Chiefs traded up to get him at what, 10? 10, 12? I think it was 10. Mm-hmm. Mitchell Trubisky went early in that draft, like number 2 overall in that draft. Mahomes wasn't even thought of by anybody. Deshaun Watson was in that class, I think. He wasn't thought of by anybody as like the number one, surefire number one quarterback in that class. So no doubt he was great. Yeah, no doubt he was great in college. But we've definitely sprinkled some pixie dust on what those Tech teams were with Mahomes. He was great. Again, he was great. But like you said, he wasn't just like putting the team on his back. And look, I know sometimes they could score 60 points and lose, and how much can you put on a quarterback? But there were times where they would lose with 38 points. And the reality is, if you're at Tech and your defense is that bad, sometimes you're going to have to go out and score 48 if you want to win 9 or 10 games. I think they could have won 9 or 10 a couple times when he was there. It would have elevated the way we thought about him in the moment, as opposed to having to look back and go, oh, yeah, he was always a freak.
What about Mike, his appearance? What do you think?
Yeah, he was good. I think he and Cowherd, probably there's a little bit of chemistry to be developed there in terms of the way Cowherd kind of, he can drag out on his questions sometimes and get a little convoluted and then throw it to a guest and stuff. But Mike did a good job of answering his questions. Talked about Dez, talked about Blackman. Those were the two names that popped to mind whenever you think of just absolute freaks that were around during the Mike Gundy era. I thought he was good. Some chemistry there throughout the season. If these are regular hits, then it's something that I would probably want to tune in pretty regularly from time to time. Because, Carson, my dream scenario is that Oklahoma State beats Oregon on Fox. I assume that game is going to be on Fox. I don't know. But my dream scenario is that Oklahoma State beats Oregon, and then Mike Gundy is committed to go on Cowherd Weekly to talk about college football. And the biggest story in college football is that Oklahoma State just beat the team that they lost to 69-3 a year ago, and Mike has to go talk about it with Cowherd. It would be unbelievable. It would be it would be appointment viewing. Like, that would be, for Oklahoma State fans, 100,000 Oklahoma State fans would tune in to watch that interview.
That would be something else. I hadn't even thought about that yet. That would be something. And look, I think Mike is kind of uncomfortable doing that for the first time, sitting on the big stage with Cowherd and all that. I think he'll get even better as he goes. I think he kind of just was defaulting to, like, Mike Gundy at a press conference mode and, like, kind of going into the same beats, the same kind of talking points. I want to see Mike kind of take the press conference hat off and just kind of cut it loose, because, you know, I only covered Mike as the head coach, and everyone, all the older folks in the media that had been around longer than me always said that when Mike was the offensive coordinator under Les Miles, he was like Todd Monken-esque as far as talking to the media, unbelievable sound bites, just this gregarious, outgoing person. And I think he had to change some of that to be like the leading man, the steady, you know, captain of the ship as the head coach. I'd like to see him kind of just cut it loose and have more just a normal conversation rather than a Q&A, you know. So hopefully that's what it'll turn into. And I think he did a great job for his first time doing it, and we all probably knew he would. So that'll be fun to watch. I think that's a good thing for Oklahoma State, having Mike up there, because anytime they're going to pop him up on the screen, they're going to be talking about his career at OSU. It's just more, I think, exposure for the program. So it's a really great thing for Mike as well as OSU too.
Yeah, I completely agree. Just for him to get up there and talk about some of the best players he's coached, some of the best teams he's coached, talk about the Big 12, I think that he can give some credence to the Big 12, because a lot of people look back at that Mahomes-Mayfield era, and I think in their brains they're like, oh, my God, the Big 12 just didn't play any defense for a decade. And Mike even made the point whenever he was on there with Colin, we had 6 or 7 years in a row in that conference where there were 4 or 5 quarterbacks playing in the NFL out of the Big 12 every year. And everybody just wanted to talk about how bad the defenses were. You got an NFL-level quarterback in college, you're going to light people up. We've seen it in the SEC. The SEC has had more NFL quarterbacks in the last 6, 7 years, and the SEC has started to score a lot more points in the last 6, 7 years, as opposed to LSU and Alabama playing a 9-6 game in 2011 that we had to see a rematch of for the national title. So hopefully he can give Oklahoma State and the Big 12 a little bit of love whenever he's on there. It'll be a good way for Mike to just get back in the public eye. So I hope that it happens more and more.
Yep, I agree. That was a lot of fun. Someone we've been meaning to discuss, there's been so much going on here in the spring and spring sports and everything, is what Cade Cunningham has done this year with the Detroit Pistons. My gosh. I mean, what? They were the number one seed in the East, and he has literally just gone ham. I got Cade going ham as the headline. That's the best way to put it. I mean, we haven't talked enough about, you know, OSU basketball players. We've had some success. We've had guys drafted in the first round. We've had guys play for, you know, a decade, thinking of like the Desmond Masons of the world. We've never really had an NBA superstar. I know Richard Dumas, I think, probably been the best NBA player with OSU connections. That's probably the number one guy before. I think Desmond Mason had a long career, but Dumas probably had the higher height. But Colby, it's an open and shut case now who the best Oklahoma State alum is in NBA history as far as NBA careers go. Because what he's doing right now is, it's approaching, he's not Shea. Like, I don't mean to like put him in Shea's category yet, but if he keeps going the way he is this year, this playoffs, if he maintains this thing, he's one of the top 5 to 10 players in the entire league.
Yeah, he's undoubtedly one of the top 10 players in the league already. I don't think he's in that top five just yet, but he's close. And what he's done these last couple of games, look, Detroit, like you said, they were the one seed. They won 60 games this year. He was unbelievable. But this is a flawed team. Like, he's really their only offensive creator. They're not a great three-point shooting team. They have some flaws that can sneak up on young teams in the playoffs. It looked like they were going to get run off the court by the Magic. They're down 3-1 in this series. Cade played a part in digging into that 3-1 hole. I think in games 2, 3, and 4, he had 26 turnovers combined in those three games. You know, the Magic know that they can just sell out and do everything to stop him, double, rotate, and they were doing it really well. And then Cade, just game 5, 45 points, a dagger step back with 30 seconds left to put the game away and send it to Orlando for a game 6. And then game 6 in Orlando was one of the most unique NBA games I've ever seen, where Detroit just had absolutely nothing going. Orlando was dominating that game. Orlando was up 24 in that game. The Pistons allow 19 points in the second half. The Magic score 8 points in the fourth quarter. At one point, the Pistons went on a 35-4 run. Cade dropped 20-plus in the fourth. It's like Cade just absolutely took over offensively, put that entire weight on his shoulders, and the entire team just started getting after it defensively at a level. It's like a lot of people listening to this probably watch more Thunder basketball than anything else. You know, the Thunder have these 6-7 minute runs they'll go on in third quarters where it's like, oh, the Thunder up by 6, 7, 8, and then boom, the Thunder up by 22. The Pistons did that, and they sustained it for like 20 straight game minutes. Orlando at one point missed 23 straight shots from the field. It's just, it's unlike anything that you'll probably ever see. Carson, I know you know who Brentley Romine is with the Golf Channel. He lives in Orlando. We had dinner a couple of weeks ago. He's a big Magic fan. He was excited for this matchup with the Pistons. And I texted him last night and just like, man, this is brutal. I'm sorry you had to endure that. And he sent back some words that I cannot read out on this podcast.
I'm sure he was frustrated. He had a big week last week. I saw he was interviewing Austin Eckroat and the guys down there at the Zurich. So good for Brentley. He's a tremendous advocate for the college golf, which we'll get to, a big past weekend for Oklahoma State. But I can't imagine being a Magic fan, how torturing that must be ever since Shaq left. Because I grew up a big Shaq fan, as you know. I loved the Magic. I was devastated he left Penny. But that's a tortured franchise. But I got to say this too, Colby. Like, when Cade was drafted number one overall, everyone viewed that draft as like there's no franchise player in this draft. And they all kind of – all the NBA experts and the draft nicks all kind of talked down to Cade as like, yeah, he's the number one pick, but it's because this draft class is so weak. I don't know if this guy can be a title winner, a franchise player. And I think those voices were going to grow really loud when they were down 3-1 in this series. And I think what he did in that game 6 to force game 7, he had 19 points in the fourth quarter alone. Orlando scored just 19 in the second half. And what he did down the stretch, I think, answered a lot of that speculation. Because you're right, they are a bit of a flawed team, even though they had the number one amount of wins, the number one seed in the East. I think what he proved it to me, and it should have proved it to a lot of people, that he can be the best player on a title team, or at least a title contender anyway. I don't think Detroit can win the championship this year. But to me, Colby, he's continued to answer any criticism that could possibly be laid towards him. Going to one of the worst, most poorly run franchises to begin with in Detroit, has done nothing since Rip Hamilton and Ben Wallace and the gang were there. He's really evolving into an absolute super-duper megastar right before our very eyes this playoffs in the season.
Yeah, and he's the reason they've won these last two games. This is legacy stuff for Cade. Like, these last two games, when you're down in elimination games, like, obviously he's not LeBron, but everybody, you know, but LeBron had that elimination game when he was, like, 20 years old where he scored 23 straight points or something. Like, these elimination games, whenever you come big and keep your team's season afloat, those are legacy games, and Cade's putting some of those in right now. So, yeah, but before Cade, I mean, Desmond was the name that would come to my mind for NBA guys. Marcus Smart as well has had a really nice career. I think Tony Allen, everything Tony Allen did for a long time as one of the elite perimeter defenders in the NBA. But as far as, like, face of the franchise, top five potentially player in the league, potential to at some point in his career win an MVP, like the level you have to play at to be in the conversation to win an MVP in the NBA, like what Shea and Jokic and Wimby and these guys are doing, it's unbelievable what you have to do, how good you have to be over a span of 6 months to even have yourself in that conversation. And Cade was in that conversation for a lot of the season. Let's remember, He just came back from a collapsed lung like 2.5 weeks ago. Yeah, it's just, he's awesome. I love watching him play. If you're not tuning into to any of the playoffs aside from the Thunder, you should be watching Cade. And they're going to win that game 7, Carson. Orlando, I'm sorry, you don't get to just totally collapse like that and then go on the road and win a game 7. Cade and the Pistons will win game 7. They will advance to face the Cavs or the Raptors. If they don't, I'd be heartbroken for Cade to go home and lose that game 7. I can't see it happening.
I'm just so glad he's in the East, not the West. So we don't have to root against him. You know, that would have been miserable. I'm still so pissed off that Wimby went to the Spurs. Like, the Spurs have been bad like twice in my lifetime, and both times they landed the number one overall pick and franchise cornerstone Hall of Famer types, and Tim Duncan first, then Wimbanyama.
Do you know what odds the Spurs had in that draft when they landed Wimby?
Oh, like 1% maybe? Less than 1%?
I don't know the percentages. It was a little higher than 1 because they had the 9th best odds. Out of 14, they had the 9th best odds, and they landed Victor freaking Wembanyama. I was talking to a buddy the other day about how, like, he was like talking about how he wanted the lottery to fall for who to get what player. And I said, you know how I want the lottery to fall? Unless the Thunder get lucky, I just want all the top picks to go to the East. Send everybody East. Get them out of the West. I mean, even the Mavs last year, 11th best odds. First pick, Cooper Flagg, generational talent. Stop stockpiling the talent in the West. Send them East. Let them go compete with Cade.
It's been that way since I was a kid. Like, I don't remember a time where the East was better than the West. It's always been that way for weird reasons. It's helped that Boston's got their act together over the last decade. But, man, it's just been so front-loaded. I guess when Jordan was around, you had the Ewing and the Knicks, and then Jordan and them.
Yeah, the East was better back then. Yeah, the East was way better in the 80s, 90s.
The Magic were rolling, too, back then, like I mentioned with Shaq and them, so... huge, huge story in relation to Oklahoma State football that involves the Texas Tech program. Brendan Sorsby has taken a leave from the Texas Tech Red Raiders, the presumptive number one team in the Big 12 this year. They get this top quarterback out of Cincinnati for $6 million a year, but he admits to, I believe he was gambling on his own team, and he's taken a leave. And I gotta believe, Colby, if he was gambling on the team he's on. I don't believe he was playing perhaps that year. I can't remember the exact – I need to pull up the exact details about it. But I'd be hard-pressed to see this guy play college football this year. I would guess he'd go to the supplemental draft, which that's what a lot of the articles surrounding him right now are stating. There are a lot of draft articles for, like, teams in the NFL. But if he doesn't play, Colby, this blows the Big 12 wide open. It was pretty wide open besides Tech. And if Tech's having to replace a quarterback midstream like this after the NIL dust has settled, then whew, I really like Eric Morris's chances to make some noise this year.
Yeah, I mean, they're already going to be replacing Eric Bailey, who was a top three pick on the defensive. Shout out Eric Bailey, Tulsa World, good guy. David Bailey. How about David Bailey got drafted? They're already replacing
Brandon
him.
Roy? And, is Brandon Roy playing still?
Yeah, good call. And now they might – they might be replacing their quarterback. Look, Carson, there's a human element to this, gambling addiction, all those things. There are also consequences. You've got to follow the rules. If you can't operate inside that system, then you don't get to be a part of that system. I remember probably 7 or 8 years ago, I was going to physical therapy. I had something going on with my shoulder. And ended up making friends at PT with an NFL official. Carson, he was there the same days I was, same time. He was a sports guy. I was a sports guy. And we talked a lot. And one of the strict rules that they have as NFL refs, they can't gamble on any sports. Carson, it was so strict that if he went to Riverwind to go to a concert, like, he could literally stay on the tile, never walk on the carpet. He had to report it to the NFL before and after if he even stepped inside the doors to go to a concert at Riverwind. Like, there are strict guidelines in place to protect the integrity of the sports that we are watching, not only for the viewing experience, for the gambling, for the money, for all of it. The rules are very strict. And if he's going through something where this is causing turmoil in his life, I feel for him. I hope he gets the help he needs. I hope that he can put the phone down, delete the apps, and not place any more bets. And that being said, there are consequences for the ones that he's already placed, and it seems really likely that consequence could very well be the end of his collegiate career. And it upends the Big 12. Texas Tech is still even money to win the conference, but they were massive favorites to win the conference with Sorsby. And now it's May, and they're going to have to figure out who's going to be taking snaps come September. And that's not an enviable position.
Yeah. And, you know, Dylan Raiola, the quarterback from Nebraska, who looks like Mahomes, was rumored to be going to Texas Tech. He ends up transferring to Oregon, even though their quarterback stuck around. And there's been speculation about could Raiola transfer to Tech, because they were pretty close to joining forces last offseason. But the thing is, Colby, there is no transfer window in spring. The NCAA got rid of the spring transfer window for the 26/27 season. So any transfer would require a waiver or legal workaround, and there is no guarantee that would get approved. So any player trying to transfer to Tech to be the quarterback there would be banking on the NCAA bending their own rules, which good luck with that. That doesn't happen very often, if not for select programs. I couldn't think Texas Tech would qualify, because we all know what happened with Dez. Sorry, what were you going to say?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, respectfully, the NCAA has no business bending rules so that Texas Tech can get a quarterback. Like, if your quarterback has a gambling addiction and has been betting on sports and isn't able to play, you don't just get to go pick a quarterback off somebody else's roster at this point in the process. Like, that's just it is what it is, and it's a bummer for Texas Tech. But I think I'd feel the same way if news broke about Mestemaker doing the same thing. I think I'd feel the same way. Like, it's too late in the process. There aren't any transfer windows. You don't just get to go pick somebody off somebody else's roster nationally and bring them in this late in the process. It's just I don't think that should happen. I don't think that will happen.
No, it shouldn't, and it won't. And I gotta tell you, Colby, how seriously though, if they don't have Sorsby — I haven't looked at their roster, but they don't have anyone close to a Sorsby on their roster as far as a backup quarterback would be. They put all their chips in on that, just like OSU has with Mestemaker. So how much does this improve OSU's odds of winning the Big 12 this year, Colby? For me, it's a lot. I'm curious to see how you quantify that.
Yeah, it depends if you're asking me or if you're asking the bookmakers, because I'll rattle off the – okay, I'll just rattle off, starting with Texas Tech, and I'll work my way down to Oklahoma State. So Texas Tech is the favorites to win the conference, and then you go BYU, Utah, Houston, Kansas State, TCU, Arizona, Arizona State, Baylor, Oklahoma State, and Kansas tied at 10th best odds to win the conference, 33-1. Look, in the era of the portal of player movement, these preseason odds have been really off the past couple of years, especially maybe not so much in the SEC, where you know Georgia and Alabama are going to be hanging around, but in the Big 12, these odds have been way off in a conference that has some parity. I think Oklahoma State right now, with some of the unknowns, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, new staff, all that stuff, I think Oklahoma State should be behind Tech, BYU, Utah, but that next grouping of teams, Houston, K-State, TCU, Arizona, Arizona State, Baylor — like, I think Oklahoma State, you can throw Oklahoma State and Kansas in the tier, and I think that's just — I rattled off 8 teams right there. I think that's like an 8-team tier that any of those programs could be a surprise and could compete with those top 3 teams.
I totally agree. I mean, OSU 10th, like, I know you and I are gun shy after what happened a couple years ago, but that seems like a huge — if that's really how they're viewed by the bookmakers, that seems like a really advantageous betting opportunity, does it not? Not to win the Big 12, but if they're that down on them, is the win total creeping lower as we speak? I mean, come on now. That's 10th in the league with what they got from North Texas? Come on.
I just have to say, I'm a huge fan of our, "Oh my God, the quarterback was gambling, he might not get to play" headline turning into a, "Should we throw some money down on this" conversation.
We don't have any eligibility left. We're good.
Oh, I know. We're not breaking any rules. We're not breaking any rules. I still have not put any money back in my account after I blew it all on Oklahoma State's 2024 season. Maybe, I don't know. We'll see how work goes over the next few months. Maybe if I get a little work bonus or anything, I can sprinkle just a little bit of cheese on Oklahoma State to win the conference, and or at least maybe make it to Arlington.
Well, I'm excited, because Tech getting Sorsby was a big deal. It really solidified them as already being the best team in the league, and a lot of teams had a lot of work to do. Because, I mean, We didn't talk enough as we will transition here to OSU baseball and softball next, but what Tech did last year, Colby, they had one of the most dominant regular seasons we've ever seen in Big 12 history. They won every single league game by double-digit points. That is almost unheard of. Vince Young didn't do that. He had to scramble on a fourth down to not lose to Kansas up in Lawrence. It's just, it's hard to do that week in, week out. So I know they lost David Bailey, like you mentioned, the number 2 overall pick, but they're still the prohibitive favorite, barring the Sorsby incident not being cleared up. But I really like OSU's schedule. Past the Oregon game, I really like their odds to light people up and really make some noise this year. I'm getting more bullish with every incident that happens at other programs. I'm loving it.
Yeah, no doubt. At this point, just keep everybody healthy. Keep all these receivers, Caleb Hawkins, Drew Messemaker. Get everybody to week one healthy. We're going to get a nice litmus test with that early game against Oregon. It's tough in a way to have that game, but it's also nice to have that game on the schedule because it'll be a good measuring stick. It'll be a crazy atmosphere. I can't wait to be at that one.
Yeah, Boone Pickens will be spitting fire that game. I mean, the excitement for this new era, the excitement for this new coach, I just think it's going to hit fever pitch. So, speaking of pitching, nice little segue there. OSU baseball, Colin Ritchie makes history. Colby was telling me more about this as we were coming on to the show. And I got to say, Colby, this is pretty dang cool. Colin Ritchie steps to the plate and walks off TCU.
Can you see this? Yeah, there we go. We will see you tomorrow night.
Yep. You got it. Sorry.
I think he can. So, Colin Ritchie walks off TCU there. Three homers on the game, Colby. And you mentioned Pete Incaviglia's numbers, which are just off the charts. So tell us more about Colin Ritchie's night that he had there against TCU.
Yeah, Incaviglia is a total freak. He has the most home runs in a single season for Oklahoma State with 48. Second most in a season is 30. There's a couple of guys at that level. Ventura had 26, was the most he ever hit in a season, Robin Ventura. And Colin Ritchie now sits at 25. That's the most by an Oklahoma State baseball player since the year 2000. Nolan Schubert had it at 23. So Colin Ritchie needed to hit one last night to tie Nolan Schubert with 8 games remaining in the season. And he did 2 better than that. And to do it in that manner, you had just gotten above 500 in conference play with the sweep at Texas Tech. First time we've recorded since Oklahoma State finished that off, by the way. Well done, Cowboys, to get down to Lubbock and take 3 from them and get yourself back to 11-10 in conference. Then you drop the Tuesday game to Oral Roberts. Oklahoma State's been really good on Tuesdays this year. You give them a pass for dropping that one. Man, to come out and win that game last night, and they needed every last one of those long balls from Colin Ritchie. Oklahoma State took an early lead, but then they fall behind 6-3. It was still 6-5 in, I believe, the 7th, whenever Ritchie sent one out to get the game tied. And then to come out in the bottom of the 9th and hit the walk-off, it's just – it keeps the momentum rolling that you got down in Lubbock. It puts you in a position now where you only need to win 1 out of 2 this weekend to win the series, to get yourself 2 games above 500. TCU was riding a 7-game winning streak coming in. Like, TCU is a really good team, and they had us last night. They had us on the ropes, and Colin Ritchie single-handedly pulled Oklahoma State off the ropes and won that game. 3 home runs, making history. It's just what a night for Colin Ritchie. So sometimes as an athlete, it's just your night. He said after the game he didn't know if he'd get anything to hit in that last at-bat, and shame on TCU for thinking, you know what? This guy's hit 2 tonight. What are the odds he's going to hit another one? First pitch, he lets go by. Second pitch, he sends it to the seats, and the place went nuts. My mom was there. She said it was awesome. So, yeah, good for Colin Ritchie. Good for the baseball team, man. They've got it rolling. They're back above 500, comfortably above 500 in conference now, and I'm glad to see them turning it around in the second half of their season.
Yeah, Lamont Matthews in 1999 and Monty Ferris in 1988 are tied with second most home runs in a season with 30, like you mentioned, and hits one more, he'll tie Robin Ventura as a Cowboy. Pretty amazing. Those are some. Monty Ferris could rake. He's a name that comes up a lot from the old timers on the baseball front. So, yeah, much better play overall from Oklahoma State. They still need to win more series coming home down the home stretch, but it's been a big improvement versus how they started the season in the regular season. And as far as softball goes, Colby, I think all eyes and all focus really needs to be on Ruby Malin, what season she's having for Oklahoma State. She's really been the engine for OSU. And the Cowgirls, don't look now, Cole, but they've won, I believe, I counted it up before the show, they've won 11 of their last 12. So they are just scorching, scorching hot right now. And they won the season opener against Kansas 8-1.
Yeah, the series opener against Kansas. Yeah, they've won like 7 or 8 in a row. This is the final series of the season for softball. Oklahoma State baseball has 2 series left, Arizona and Arizona State. But this is the last one for the Cowgirls. They're playing right now in Stillwater against Kansas and another one tomorrow. Big 12 tournament is next weekend, Thursday through Saturday in Oklahoma City. If anybody wants to go out, there will be some good softball being played. Oklahoma State will be among the favorites next week. And, yeah, they've got it rolling. So they're up to 15-7 in conference now, 36-13 overall. It was really a so-so start to the season for softball, and it looked like, you know, can they get back to that point with those teams we all fell in love with a few years ago? And it looks like they might be there, and Ruby Malin is definitely the headliner. So, I mean, you look at these games, they're winning 8-1, 5-0, 8-1, 9-1, 4-2, 5-0. Like, it's hard to score right now against Oklahoma State, which has them winning a bunch of games. So hopefully they can keep it rolling, take 2 more from Kansas, and keep that momentum seriously going into Oklahoma City next week.
Yep, they're playing well at the right time. So it's you want to be hot going into the postseason. They certainly are. I know Oklahoma was they were having trouble with A&M yesterday. I was actually went to
– Yeah, they got beat.
Yeah, so I went to Nora's Middle School yesterday. It was a career day. And they wanted me to – they kind of asked me, like, last second to come up and talk about my career to all the eighth graders, which, you know, for the whole middle school, that's probably the most unruly audience, right? They're like, well, I'm ready to get to high school. It was this jabroni up here, and it was actually really good. But the assistant principal, I believe, was watching the OU softball game on her phone. So I said, I hate to see that. I hate to see OSU beat them there in Oklahoma City. But I can't remember where I was, but Ruby Malin has been on fire, as have the Cowgirls. And let's get to golf. Echo Contracting sponsors our golf school goodbye. I don't have the ad read, Colby. Did you get the ad read? Because you've been reading it the last few episodes. I need to get the ad read. But I do have something
for
you here.
You were attached on the email, but yes, we've got it. Echo Contracting. Echo is a proud sponsor of the pod, offering electrical contracting services throughout all of Oklahoma. They pride themselves on high-quality professional jobs done right the first time. Call or text for a quote today, 405-279-8444, or email info@echo-contracting.com. Love the good people at Chris's. Love the good people at Echo. Go support the people who support Pistols Firing, and support Preston Stout back to back to back. Carson, he's only played in 3 of them. All he knows is how to win Big 12 championships. This dude is unbelievable.
I mean, my wager of him being the first or the next major winner at Oklahoma State is aging like the finest wine there is. This dude is he's having a better career than like Hovland and Wolf. I mean, you win 3 straight Big 12. Now they got some work to do. They got to win a national championship. I know there's team goals here, but actually Wolf won a ton of events. I better slow my roll there. Wolf won a lot. And like, Wolf had a legitimate National Player of the Year season that year they won the national title.
And Wolf pretty easily won the individual national championship at the Blessings It was 19. So, yeah, those guys were incredible. Those guys were incredible. Those guys won a team title. But Stout's already got a team title under his belt, too. He's got a team title under his belt. He's got 2 team Big 12 championships under his belt. He's got 3 individual Big 12 championships under his belt. Like, this is some of the best golf that we've ever seen played at Oklahoma State. And again, that's a long list of guys who've accomplished great things. Victor Hovland won the USAM when he was at Oklahoma State. He was low-am at the Masters when he was at Oklahoma State. Those guys won a title. You go back to the teams that had Hoffman and Uline and Tway and Fowler, and you know, before that was Mahan and Noren and all these guys. Like, Oklahoma State has an incredible golf history, but what this team is doing right now and what this player is doing right now is special, and it should be celebrated.
It's unbelievable, and I think – you know, Jackson Koivun at Auburn also won the SEC 3 straight years, which hadn't been done since the 60s. So this is shaping up to be where Jackson Koivun and Preston Stout are 2 of the best amateur golfers we've seen in quite some time. We lost Colby here, but we'll bring him back. I thought this was going to be the first show ever where my computer didn't boot Colby off, but I guess such is life. But between Jackson Koivun winning three straight SEC championships and Preston Stout winning three straight Big 12s, that would be just a tremendous monumental matchup for the individual national championship. And then, God, if Auburn and Oklahoma State were to play in match play, as if and those two guys happen to be paired up together for all the marbles, would be just must-see TV. That would be about the height of college golf for my money. I think we've still lost Colby, and I think my internet's having some trouble there. So we'll effort to get Colby back. But in the meantime, yeah, Preston Stout and the Cowboys just continue to roll. So, yeah, I did want to show, too, kind of the winning putt here. Your Brently Romine, another appearance from him. this is Preston Stout becoming the first.
Shout out, Brently.
First ever? Is that right? First ever to win three straight Big 12 titles? Wow. That's a heck of a stat
there. I mean, dude, three straight's hard. Three straight is hard.
God, look at that green.
Yeah, I mean, there's been elite golf. Prairie Dunes is unbelievable. That's where this was at. It was Prairie Dunes in Hutchinson, Kansas. I've been fortunate enough to play that golf course five or six times, and it is unbelievable.
Yep. So, again, credit to Alan Bratton. Credit to the Cowboys. I think that was 58 conference championships now for Oklahoma State. It's out of this world. I mean, 58. Yeah, here's Stout knocking it in there for the win. So, again, they're rolling, and when you hopped off, Colby, I mentioned Jackson Koivun had won three straight SEC titles. Can you imagine? Like, I keep bringing this up, but that's going to be a hell of a fight just to win individual honors at the national championship. But my God, if Auburn and Oklahoma State happen to meet during match play, let alone the championship match, and those two are paired together, that is just absolute fireworks, and that's just basically two PGA Tour pros going at it at the college level.
Yeah, and I think that's what everybody who pays close attention to college golf, that's what everybody wants. Everybody wants Koivun v. Stout in the individual and in match play because those two guys, it's a course they obviously saw last year. They're familiar with it. Good memories on that golf course for Stout and for Oklahoma State. But, yeah, if we could get Koivun and Stout coming down in the individual, that would bump the ratings up for sure. And then, man, if you could get those two in the match play, I don't know if they'd go out first. I don't know if they'd go out last. But Stout v. Koivun, that's heavyweights. That's Ollie Frazier just throwing blows. So, yeah, I would be dialed in for every shot of that one.
Yep, absolutely. I don't think OKGC lasted very long, unfortunately. LIV Golf seems to be crumbling. That was kind of the biggest news out of the golf world this week as we're kind of in that lull between majors. Weird timing. I guess the Saudis pulled out and so a lot of the funding's out. And I think a lot of the players are now just kind of scrambling to see where they're going to play next year. And unfortunate for Taylor Gooch. I thought it was a cool deal, kind of putting together an Oklahoma franchise. But the writing was kind of on the wall that we had heard that, you know, the Saudis were pulling funding for this league. And kind of the golf world's going to try to come back together as one. But I got to think a lot of the players that left are not going to be welcomed back with open arms. I mean, I'm sure Bryson and Rahm, they can work something out. But past those two guys, I think the rest are going to have to go grind it out the way Patrick Reed did on overseas, maybe on other tours besides the DP World Tour. I don't think they can just bring over everybody from LIV. So it's going to be a bit of a mess, but short-lived probably for OKGC.
Short-lived. I see what you did there. The Saudis are funding the rest of this season. They did have to cancel an event in New Orleans already because I guess they didn't have things how they needed to be down there. So one of two things is going to happen here for Taylor Gooch and for LIV Golf. Either they're not going to get more funding, it's going to totally go away, and then these guys will try to make their way back to the tour. The PGA Tour Commissioner has already said, we will bring back the guys who make the product better. Not everybody on that tour would make our product better, is more or less what he said. And he's right. There are 10, maybe 15 guys on that tour who would make the product better on the PGA Tour. And they also said that the punishments, the reintegration will be more harsh for these players than it was for Koepka and Reed, and that it'll even be harsher for the players who were involved in the lawsuit against the PGA Tour, which includes Bryson DeChambeau. I'm almost certain that it also includes Taylor Gooch. I seem to remember him being a part of that. So that could be a potential hurdle for him. So that's one scenario. The other scenario is that LIV gets enough funding to keep the league going, but not enough to, like, do what they were – doing with the Saudis where they're trying to lure and keep big talent. And then somebody, it was SI.com or somebody wrote a story the other day about worst case scenario is for the golfers over there is not that Liv folds. It's that we have like 3 years of zombie Liv before all these contracts expire. And like John Rahm and Taylor Gooch and Cam Smith and Dustin Johnson are playing 3 years of zombie Liv in these just like weird nothing events with smaller purses than what the Saudis could offer and stuff. But I don't know. Rahm is Rahm's contracted through 2029. Like if he has to honor that contract because somebody else buys the league, I don't know. It could get really weird over there, but I'm fascinated to see how the reintegration process works with those players coming back to the tour. There's reports that many of their agents have reached out to the tour office to try to figure it out. It's just the whole situation is truly, truly fascinating. And, you know, golf's unique being an individual sport, but I can't think of a time where we've had something quite like this where leagues have split and now we're figuring out how to bring these guys back and what level of punishments are they going to have to face. The whole thing is pretty unbelievable to watch unfold.
I just don't see how, you know, there's all these reports that the golfers hadn't been paid through Q1 of this year. Like, does Rahm have to stick around if they're not paying him what he was signed on to be paid? I think it's going to go away. I don't see any way they could force John Rahm to stay on a zombie live and still pay him what his contract stipulates. I just don't see that how that's possible. I think they're just trying to get to the end of the season, Colby, and then just everyone will just disappear in the off season and just call it a day. I think the CEO just putting on a brave face and just trying to get to the finish line, and then they'll just call it. And they're just being kind of obstinate through it all. And look, I know Taylor a little bit. We have mutual friends. I don't think Taylor, if I'm truly honest, doing this show the way it's supposed to be done, I don't think Taylor did himself a lot of favors with some of his antagonistic comments that he made after he made the jump to live. I don't, the lawsuit didn't help either. I think that's where a lot of the biggest bad blood is with the PGA Tour is the lawsuit. So I don't know if Taylor really would want to go try and grind his way back. He's made a ton of money. I mean, a ton.
He's young though, man. He's young. I can't imagine he wants his golf career to be done in his mid-30s. Like I think he would do what was required to get back to the PGA Tour. I don't know. Haven't talked to him. Haven't talked to anybody close to him. I just can't imagine him wanting his golf career to be over in his mid-30s, regardless of how much money he's put in the bank.
I hope so. But this is the same guy who didn't try to go qualify for the US Open when Sergio Garcia was going to local qualifiers. So I don't know. Who knows? Only he can answer that. I'd love to see it because when Taylor left, he was top 30 in the world. He was really becoming a serious player on the PGA Tour. Him and Max Homa had become really, really close back then, and he was really climbing the ladder from top 30. I think he was going to eventually get into the top 20 even, maybe in OWGR. But we'll see. I hope Taylor gets back on the PGA Tour because he's a great golfer. He's a great representative of our state and certainly of Oklahoma State as well. So I was sad to hear that Liv crumbled as soon as they kind of got his own franchise. That would have been kind of fun to watch and fun to support if they came here locally or within driving distance as well. So anything else golfing-wise we need to get to? I mean, we're kind of in that lull between the majors, and how are Hovland and the gang doing? Oh, we had Christopher Ventura was in the mix last week on the team event. We mentioned Ekroth and them were in contention and kind of faded, but I forgot to mention how well Chris Ventura played out of nowhere. But another guy from the championship team that we don't even talk about, but he's kind of been bouncing back and forth in Korn Ferry and PGA.
And still a really good player. Boshu and Stevens played well last week. Christopher Ventura was with Christopher Wrighton, and they played well, the Scandinavians on the team together. So, yeah, they played some really good golf. Carson, fun little brain teaser here for you. I want you to try to guess what I shot today. I made 6 birdies and no bogeys. I want you to guess what I shot today.
6 birdies and no bogeys?
I'll give you a hint. It's a trick question. It's kind of a riddle. It's 6 birdies, no bogeys.
I'm going to say you had 3 doubles to shoot even par.
You nailed it. I made 6 birdies, 3 doubles, and 9 pars, and I shot even on one of the nicest days of the year. It was a couple of loose swings away from being a really low one. But, yeah, it was one of the more funny scorecards I've had in a long time.
That's the old Jordan Spieth scorecard, the Psycho scorecard.
Yes. Yes.
Unreal. I played at Galardia last weekend, just played like absolute dog crap. So I think I mentioned that last show, but I'm just, it's sad how far my game has dropped. So I gotta start hitting some more balls throughout the week when
that's
I get
a bummer.
Some free time. But
yep, gotta feel the face. Carson, we've got one other thing that we need to get to before we leave here.
Oh yeah,
one other thing.
Cue the music,
Carson. What are we doing? What are we doing?
What are we doing?
76 teams in the NCAA tournament? Whose idea was this? Who's asking for more teams in the NCAA tournament? Who got left out this last year and thought, you know what? I think my team was good enough. I think my team deserved to be there. I think my team belonged. Now, I'm sorry if you can't make it inside the top 68. And look, I think 68 is too many. I preferred it when it was just 64 and we didn't have these dumb play-in games. I don't watch the dumb play-in games. 64 was better. But at least you can make the argument that with 68, it's 2 or 3 days of basketball and we're all still filling out our brackets the exact same way, and it's not really upending things too much. This is such a blatant, obvious money grab from college basketball that is weakening their product and taking away one of the things that I think that we have all always loved, which is the 64 team 1 through 16 bracket. I don't know how they're going to do it. Maybe they're going to throw another 8 teams in and just do more play-in games. But then are we just like having a tournament to get in the tournament? Carson, when I saw this the other day, I was sickened by this. It's a money grab. Plain and simple, it's a money grab. It doesn't make the product better. You don't need 76 teams in the tournament to identify who the best team is and who can go on a run. I think it's an absolute joke. And I think it's college basketball. You know, college basketball, more than any other major American sport over the last 25 years, if I just said, pick a major American sport that hates itself, which one would you pick? The answer is easily college basketball. Everything that they have done for 25 years has weakened their product, and this is just an extension of that. I hate that they're going to 76.
Which would you hate more, 76 in college basketball or 16 in football?
Probably 76 in college basketball, only because there is nostalgia for me with that tournament, because my whole life was that 64 team tournament, and then they made the small tweak to go to 68, and I was like, all right, you got us, you went to 68, you made the small tweak, but you better stop there. And they didn't stop there. They're going one step further. At least in football, I can say, okay, this is a new thing. It's evolving. They're experimenting with different numbers of teams to figure out what really is the perfect number to identify the best team and identify a champion. I don't think we need 16 in football by any means, but I wouldn't be as upset about that as I am about the 76 in college basketball.
I mean, it's so typical. Like, I wasn't even like surprised. You had heard about this for a while and you just knew that the greedy people behind the scenes just wanted more money. It just waters it down even further. And like, what a waste of time the play-in game has become. Look, I know teams that have won the play-in have made a run, but the same thing could be said if they were just put in the tournament. You know, obviously that would eliminate a team from getting a chance to be in it, but like, who cares? No one's watching. Like, those play-in games have to do a terrible number. Who is watching Dayton against Virginia Tech as a play-in game to get into the tournament on like the Wednesday or like the, you know, that's just a waste of time. Like, we don't need 76, much less the play-ins. Just scarcity is a good thing. We've been talking about this for weeks now and months now on the PGA Tour. They play too many events. Same thing with teams. We don't need these many teams. Scarcity creates value. And bloating it the way they have, I still think the college football playoff's a little bloated with 12. I would like to see it be 8, much like Mike Gundy said. I would even be good with maybe 6 with a bye for the top 2 teams. I mean, how many teams, Colby, can win the national championship? Mike Gundy was saying this on his show. He viewed 4 to 5 each year. I would probably say
Ooh.
I would probably say
no.
Probably less or more.
No, more. I think with NIL, you know, Alabama, Georgia, these teams, they're not stacked 3 deep with NFL talent at every position.
Yeah.
I do think that's one good thing, is the talent has been spread out. We saw Miami sneak in as the last team at 12, but there were also automatic qualifiers who didn't belong there, who got their doors blown off in the first round. I think on any given year, you're probably going to have 7 or 8 teams that are capable of winning it all.
Yeah, that was probably Mike's, you know, what he was used to for so many years talking. He probably every year he stepped on a sideline, he could see the difference between his team and like vintage Bama that had 6-7 first round picks. Although you look at Ohio State, yeah, they're doing the NFL draft. I mean, they've got like 4 or 5 guys going in the first round every year now. It's kind of crazy that they don't just win it every year. But no, I'm with you. I hate it. College sports are a mess right now, but I'm going to love college sports if Eric Morris wins a Big 12 championship this year. I'm gonna be back on the back on my horse, be back on Bullitt, riding around Boone Pickens.
Yeah, I'm still in love with college sports. It's just all the non-revenue sports that I'm in love with: wrestling, golf, baseball, softball. Like, we're having a lot of fun over there. Not so much football and basketball, but yeah, good off seasons for men's and women's basketball. Great off season for football. Another thing on the basketball side, like when it was 64. You had to have just a pretty solid season to make that tournament with all the automatic qualifiers that come from the smaller conferences. I mean, 76 teams. Do you even have to have a good year anymore to get in? Like, isn't that part of it? Shouldn't you have to have a good season to be in that tournament? And if you're at 65 and you don't get in, sorry, you are the 65th. And again, the automatic qualifiers, but still, take all the automatic qualifiers out. You're the 43rd best team in the country. Who cares? You don't belong in that tournament.
Well, that's basically what happened with college football. Like, it got to the point where you could have a losing record and go to a bowl game. That's why everybody quit watching bowl games, because everyone got in the bowl game. So it's scarcity leads to value. Just too watered down. It's so stupid. Like, I don't know what it's going to take to get college sports back to sanity, but it almost feels too far gone in every sport at this stage. But I know you like the Olympic sports, but. Golf's still rolling. We're still a golf school, so that's helpful. But Colby, appreciate it. This was a lot of fun. Appreciate all our listeners and viewers on YouTube as well. Be sure to like and subscribe the channel, and be sure to check us out every single week as we roll along here. We might start doing some drafts this summer. We had some interesting stuff to do this summer. Maybe do another rewatchables along the way. But we're kind of winding down as we get through spring sports here. But we still have a lot to play for with golf, softball, baseball. Things of that nature. So, Colby, until next time, we'll see you next week.
Real quick, Thunder Lakers prediction. Series starts tomorrow night. Series starts Tuesday night. Pardon me. Thunder Lakers, who you got?
Oh, I got gentleman sweep, Thunder, 4-1.
I have a non-gentleman sweep, Thunder and 4.
Oh, Thunder and 4.
Thunder and 4, J-Dub's health. Don't care. Thunder and 4. The Lakers are going to average 22-plus turnovers a game in this series. And the Thunder are not going to allow LeBron James to be the best player in a series that his son is playing in, like the Houston Rockets did. I couldn't believe they were just giving LeBron space to operate with. The Thunder will make him look 41 years old.
And they'll make Bronny look like me out there. they're the biggest underdogs. And it's like Lakers... The Lakers are the biggest underdogs they've ever been in the playoffs. And I think...
As they should be.
It's like the biggest underdog scenario, I believe, for a conference semifinals ever as well.
Yeah, and they're going to put Marcus Smart on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and he's either going to use screens and get switches, or he's just, love you, Marcus. Shai's going to give you the business. So, Thunder and 4.
Yeah, just take one for the team, Marcus. Just let him to the rim. Don't hurt him. Let's move on to the next series.
Yeah, everybody get out healthy. All right, great stuff, Carson. Appreciate Chris's, appreciate Echo, appreciate you all for listening and watching with us today. As always, go Pokes!